Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. It's one of those beautiful crisp fall days, November 19, 2013. And it's funny, you have to be careful what you wish for sometimes. It's so important to get a lot of rest and eat healthy food and exercise. And I have a really packed schedule this week, and I was thinking I wasn't going to get in a run today. And then the subway was late. I got off a stop earlier than I usually do because they said they were passing my stop. It was crazy. I ran all the way here in my heels. I got my exercise. And I'm feeling good. And you know, you can only do this kind of thing if you're powered by nutrient-dense plant foods. They are absolutely there when you need them. And today, I started the day, I don't always do this, but I love it when I do. I started the day with a gorgeous kale arugula salad with my favorite dressing, tahini dressing, and these luscious, super ripe, sweet, smooth pears. These pears are in season now, and they're just phenomenal. They melt in your mouth. Delicious. And I can't get enough of them. And then when they're out of season, I will have had enough. Okay, enough. Let's move on to my first guest, Ellen Jaffe Jones. She's a certified personal trainer, running coach, consultant, author, and speaker. And she has been vegan for more than 30 years. She's a two-time Emmy-winning TV reporter in Miami and St. Louis and winner of the National Press Club Award for Consumer Journalism. And she's got a website at vegcoach.com. And she's with us on the show today to talk about her new cookbook, Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households. Ellen, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Now, I heard it was your birthday.
Nasty rumor.
Yes. So if you give me a moment, I'm going to give you a song. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ellen. Happy birthday to you.
What a voice.
Thank you. I'm a greedy songbird, and anytime I have an opportunity to sing happy birthday, I do.
Opera. I'm thinking you should, like, do opera.
I do.
Awesome.
I do opera. Yes, you got that. Anyway, happy birthday, and what I want you to do you like chocolate?
Mildly, yes.
Mildly. Oh, is that not your favorite, or you do?
It is my favorite,
okay.
And I was just, you know, so hoping that Fran might be
right.
able to
Right, so
send
this
me
is
some,
what I
yeah.
want you to do. I want you to close your eyes. I want you to imagine a vegan cake to live for, chocolate cake to live for, made by Chef Fran Costigan for you. And we've put a lot of candles on it. They're soy-based, of course, vegan candles. And I want you to take a moment, make a wish, blow them out.
I have to inhale first.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, I've made my wish.
Okay, yay,
yay.
Ellen, happy
Thank you.
Birthday. So we're having a little party here at It's All About Food in honor of Ellen's birthday and in honor of so many things. It's just always good to take an opportunity to celebrate. So let's celebrate your new cookbook, Kitchen Divided.
Thank you.
Okay, interesting topic.
Yeah, you know, I was running around the country talking about my first book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, and I wrote in that book, it's more important to have somebody who loves and respects you than a clone at the dinner table. And in one of my talks, I just sort of off the top of my head said, so how many of you live in mixed marriages where one of you is veg and the other is not? And so many people raised their hands and just rolled their eyes and lots of looks of frustration, and I started asking this question every talk I gave, and I thought, you know, this is another myth that needs to be busted, which is that you can't live with somebody if they don't eat the way you do. And I just wanted to come up with some recipes that would make the poor, stressed-out vegan eater not feel like a short-order cook.
Well, relationships of all kinds are difficult. I think that's the greatest challenge we have as humans, dealing in relationships, either romantic relationships or familial relationships, business relationships. They're all difficult. And we all want to control and have it our way. It doesn't work.
especially in the kitchen.
Yeah, so it's the hardest when you're living with someone. And, you know, some relationships make it a long time and some don't. Very often two people are together and then they grow in different ways and they work things out or they move on. And at the dinner table, it's such an important place to be at peace. And if you're, you know, I think, well, you put together at the beginning of the book several different situations based on what feels good with the parties involved on how you might approach eating differently together. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. And I just found that in polling in that very scientific base on Facebook, I would ask people for ideas on how they coped. And so I came up with these different ways, plans. None of them are set in stone, and some of them overlap with each other, but it's whatever works for you. So the first one is peaceful coexistence, where each person does his or her own shopping, preparation, cooking, and cleanup. And the vegan and animal-based foods are stored on completely separate shelves in the pantry and the refrigerator. And so I found this one really minimizes the hassles and avoids arguments, if you can do it. But it really is kind of like living in two different households if you do it that way. So the next program, the next way of looking at it is a little more, we kind of give with each one of these methods. The next one is partial coexistence, where one person buys all of the food. Each person does his or her own cooking and cleanup. And it's, again, you still have the separate storage, and yet the shopping is simplified because if the non-vegan partner does the shopping, this can be an opportunity for him or her to learn more about plant-based foods. And, you know, one of the things I found, I think that the reason that there is so much of this mixed marriage stuff going around is we have a lot of new vegans that have come to the table as a result of people like high-profile people, celebrities, Bill Clinton going vegan, and people have done it for health as well as animal rights issues as the videos become so prolific out there and people can't turn their head and pretend that they don't see. But often they do it in a family setting or with their friends, and other people around them are going, what?
Yeah.
And so that's one of the ways that you can incorporate more and more people in your surroundings by inviting them to see some of the same kinds of movies and read the same books you have. So we get a lot of new vegans who are trying to figure out how to incorporate everybody else around them into their lifestyle. Then the third way is the division of labor, where everybody has specific assigned tasks. It's very clear. And the key to all of these different plans is making it very clear so everybody knows where the other person stands. The constraints are very specified, so everyone adheres to rules about where the meat and the animal products are stored, and also equipment and tools are segregated. And this kind of follows the ground of, in the Jewish religion, keeping kosher. And in some situations like that, people, when they go out, you know, they might make exceptions or do things differently. It's really whatever you work out with your partner, your family, your friends. And there may be compromises made in the division of labor where only vegan is prepared and served in the home. And that would mean that the non-vegan partner can't bring in animal food, but can eat it when eating out. So, again, those are the little things you negotiate.
Well, it sounds like things that you can apply to almost anything in life. You need to plan. You need to communicate. Organization and planning helps everything that you do. And if you strategize before the disaster happens, it's less likely that disaster will happen.
That's really true, and it sounds a little trite, but it's all about communication and setting boundaries. And I even encourage people to write these things down so you can just identify for yourself where is the red line, what will you not do, what will you do to make your partner, your family, your friends happy.
You know, I'm remembering, and I'm fortunately in a relationship right now with Gary, who is a vegan, and we both love cooking, and it's a joy that we're able to do these things together. We cook together, we sing about vegan food together, we do everything about food together, which is really fun. And but you know, I've been in other relationships, and some time ago I was living in France with a French guy, and he was very respectful about my vegan diet, but we agreed that he could have milk and cheese in the house. And what was really frustrating for me is I would make these great meals, and then he would look at it without even tasting it and just grate a bunch of cheese all over it. And I would always think, it's just like people who salt food without even tasting it. Can you please taste it and see if it needs something? But many people are in that habit of not paying attention, and they just think foods need salt. They need cheese. They need things that they're used to putting on them without paying attention. So planning and communicating is a good step in that direction.
Yeah. And I love stealth recipes where you can kind of, I have a chocolate surprise cake, not, I'm sure, as good as any of friends, it's actually an Eat Vegan, and I love to, when I'm talking, I'll show a picture of the finished product, and I'll ask people to guess what the ingredients are, and they never guess things like zucchini and pineapple are in this very rich, lush chocolate cake. And I love being able to sneak recipes like that through at a dinner party and then, you know, pass out the recipe at the end. So,
Again, that just shows most people don't know much about food. They don't know what's in their food. And then they think they have to have certain things in their food, but they don't even know anything about it to know what they need or not need in their food to make it taste good.
Right. And, you know, many people just grow up a certain way, and it's very hard. I found in my cooking classes, unless I sort of joked, I mean, this is kind of a sad thing to say, but people get desperate on their deathbeds. Mm. And often it takes some kind of life-altering event to make people consider making changes.
Yeah.
And often, especially the older they get, it is common to see this, whether, you know, it's cooking or in healthcare, that people get set in their ways. And unless there's a real compelling reason for them to change, whether it's a movie or a relative or their own experience, it can be very challenging. But I structured recipes in the book so that there are recipes that I hope would encourage or entice a meat eater to, like you say, give a second look with maybe not dumping the cheese and the meat into the recipe. But there are also flex dishes that do allow themselves, lend themselves to doing that kind of thing. So if somebody really wants to do that, they can. And then there are also side dishes that can be the main dish for the vegan, and the meat eater can do whatever they want to them.
Well, organization is important, and having different spaces and cupboards and refrigerators, it can work. You do need to have enough space. Some people don't even have enough space for the little things that they have, and it does require some organization and planning. But there's always a solution, and I think you may have alluded to this, but you may even have said it. It still keeps the door open for those meat eaters to learn more about plant foods and maybe come a little over to our side more and more. Not that that's your goal.
Absolutely.
It's
and
my goal.
There are ways that, you know, just little silly things like planting a garden. You know, when you can smell the aroma, the fragrance of fresh vegetables and herbs, it's really hard to resist. You know, the sense of smell is so powerful, especially with children. And things like making a game of cooking, when you can see that your partner is laughing, or, you know, you start dancing around the kitchen, just things like that to make it more enticing. It's not just about the ingredients, but making it a positive experience as well.
Okay, so you got a number of responses, reactions from Facebook and other places. Have you gotten reactions from the recipe in this book yet from people who've tried it out?
Oh, yes. In fact, there's this amazing woman. She's just one of my followers on Facebook. She made it her challenge. She just decided to do this one day. She made every single recipe in the book and posted a picture of it. And she deals with this. So I think this was just like, okay, I'm putting this out there. So, and yes, the response has been really, really positive as people look for tools and ways to, I mean, I think some of the recipes, hopefully most of them in the book, are just standalone great recipes, even if you didn't live in a divided kitchen. But I really wanted to make all of these recipes be appealing for those who are stressed out, especially because it's about time. You only get so much time in the kitchen before the blood sugar cooks in and you just got to eat something. And so I just wanted to make it as simple but as tasty as possible for people who are in these situations and just don't want to feel like they've got to be making everybody happy all the time.
Okay, we know that people need to find their kitchens and they need to learn how to prepare healthier food because most Americans today are lost in the kitchen and they're buying ready-made foods filled with salt, sugar, and fat. They're going out to restaurants, they're choosing all the wrong foods, and as a result, our health is in the toilet and we're suffering, and it's not a good scene. Okay, so people need to be making food, and I think when people start to learn about making food, they learn what's in it, and then they can even make sensible choices when they're buying foods outside of the home. But here's what I'd like to see. Restaurants could use these recipes. So often you go into a restaurant and they don't want to move. They don't want to budge. They don't want to be flexible. How many times have I been in a restaurant where they use chicken broth in their rice,
right,
or in their risotto, and you don't need to use chicken broth, and if they used a vegetable broth, nobody would know. Nobody would know. And
right.
If they could make food for the least common denominator so that everybody could enjoy it, and then they could add these things to it if they wanted them and charge more for them.
Absolutely, because you get healthy living as a result of eating these incredibly beautiful and health-providing recipes. But just two quick examples of what you said. In our area, we have a barbecue place about 10 minutes down the road called Mr. Bones, and I almost ran off the road one day seeing if they had a big sandwich board sign out saying vegan and vegetarian dishes. And I ended up speaking to the owner, and she said, well, we just got tired of seeing kids come in and they couldn't eat with their parents, or the Europeans especially came in saying, what do you mean there's no vegan restaurant for the next 30 miles? So they met the market demand. And then also Chipotle's in our area, for those who don't have access. It's a very nice, fresh Mexican fast food chain, but, you know, they make a big deal about promoting fresh ingredients. They posted a sign about 2 months ago that said our pinto beans are for everybody, meaning they'd taken the meat out so that vegans could eat it. And I thought, you know, the world is changing.
Yeah. Let's just meditate on that for a moment. The world is changing. Can we do it fast enough? That's the question. I'm looking in your book. I think my favorite in the book here is Quiche Your Troubles Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's the very comfort-looking food. I've been into making pot pies lately, and so I'm kind of into a savory pie moment. It's the season for savory pies in my belly. Okay, Ellen, I want to know, what are you doing for your birthday today, other than boasting about your new book?
Well, actually, this is the second radio show I've done.
Yeah.
So doesn't everybody do radio shows on their birthday?
Well,
because
they should.
What are we doing? Telling the world.
It's all about you today.
How healthy this food is, but how cheap it is, not only what you can save at the grocery store, but all those health care costs, no matter what the government decides to do. And that's just a whole mess. But, you know, I keep saying we need to take responsibility for our own health and not depend on the government to do it for us.
And for our friends who are young, to do it sooner than later, because our friends who are older are really struggling and panicking and thinking about their cholesterol and possibly having a heart attack. And it's so much easier when you get good habits when you're younger, and you're going to be stunning longer.
Well, you know, somebody posted on my Facebook page this morning, well, you know, use today to have real chocolate cake. Oh, you know, I said, there is a real chocolate cake, and I showed the picture of the one that I had posted, and, of course, the vegan variety with this lush icing, and I go, you know, for me, this is about feeling well and being around for the grandkids. I just placed in my 58th 5K race, and I feel so energized and so much better than when I didn't eat this way. I remember what that was like. Almost died of a colon blockage. I mean, that is not fun. It doesn't feel good.
No. That does not feel good, and it's not necessary. I'm all about flow. Flow. Let's all flow together. Bring it in. Let it flow in and then out. Okay, well, Ellen, thank you for joining me today. I want you to have a really spectacular birthday. It is. Fran just walked into the studio because we're going to be talking about chocolate cake for the next half hour. Fran, we already served Ellen a piece of your virtual chocolate cake and blew out
the
candles.
Happy birthday, Ellen.
Thank you, Fran.
All right, Ellen, thank you for joining me. And your website is vegcoach.com?
It is.
And what can people do when they get there?
Well, you can buy my books or you can sign up for a little personal training cyber-wise. I do that right on Skype, so that's very cool. Or vegan lifestyle coaching, because I've been doing this for the better part of 32 years. So.
Right.
Happy to share that, and thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, thank you, Ellen. Take care.
Thanks, Karen. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's take a little break and then... get ready, because we're going to be talking about chocolate, 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 chocolate. Are you ready? I'm not yet, but in a few minutes I will be. I'll be back with Fran Costigan, so stay with us. Hello, everybody. We're back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And I'm lucky. I'm just chewing and swallowing here because Fran Costigan just brought me some chocolate treats. And one day, when our technology is really developed, we'll be able to lick the screen and taste whatever it is they're showing on it, right? And smell the delicious fragrances coming out of the food. But for now... you're just going to have to listen to me describe what I've tried and salivate. Or buy this fabulous new book that we're going to be talking about next, Vegan Chocolate, Unapologetically Luscious and Decadent Dairy-Free Desserts by Chef Fran Costigan, and make what I just tried myself. So, Fran, I haven't given you an appropriate introduction, so let's just do that for a moment. I have to take a deep breath. Chef Fran Costigan is an internationally recognized culinary instructor, author, and consultant whose innovative recipes marry healthy eating with sumptuous tastes. Fran uses organic and minimally processed ingredients to make rich, moist cakes, fluff, flaky pie crust, delightful cookies and bars, creamy puddings, and much more. All are white sugar, trans fat, and cholesterol-free, and absolutely, you guessed it, delicious. Now, her first cookbook was More Great Good Dairy-Free Desserts Naturally, a complete course in exceptional desserts that satisfy vegans and omnivores alike. And now we're going to talk about the new book, Vegan Chocolate. This is a masterpiece, Fran. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for creating this book, which is going to go down in history.
Karen, I am never speechless. You know that, but I'm speechless. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for saying that about the book. Karen could make everyone on this planet just live to eat kale the way that she talks. And I do eat kale. Karen knows that.
I had kale for breakfast.
Yeah, the people in my life know that I eat a whole foods plant-based diet. And I love chocolate. And I eat them on separate plates.
I was just going to say, there's no chocolate dip kale chips in here. No.
Actually, I start most, if not all, of my cooking demonstrations and classes and lectures like The Sweets Dilemma, Can You Be Vegan, Can You Be Healthy and Eat a Treat Too, with a bunch of kale in a flower pot or something, to make the point that desserts are treats. They can be better for us treats than the stuff we find in the bodegas or the butter, you know, the margarine, white sugar, eggy things that really aren't
We've talked about this before,
right.
Where people don't even know what good is, and so they keep eating more. They want big cookies and big cakes because they're all crap, and when you eat
that little
morsel
of good.
Good.
And I know that it's true because I watch when I serve people. I watch, and your body knows if you get something that's brown and you're told that it's chocolate, but it's really carob and it's made with Splenda or something. Your body just keeps looking for the real deal. I'm thrilled that you said this book will go down in history. I'll tell you, who knows, but I never imagined, and I've been doing this for 20 some odd years, that a book with vegan in the title, my publisher did not shy away, vegan chocolate, it has been number one in chocolate books on Amazon for over a week. Thank you, people who've bought the book and supported the book. And it's ranking very high in traditional dessert category as well. And that's what I wanted. I am very careful about testing recipes. Nothing goes out until it really is unapologetically luscious and decadent and happens to be dairy-free. So I get it to a certain point, and these recipes were all carefully tested by real people in real kitchens all over the country, of the U.S., of A., and all over the world as well. And they're reliable. You have to follow some of Fran's rules. I have a rule book at the front of every chapter because the different, you know, pie making is different from cake making, cookie making, and so on. You follow those rules, which are really basic. Put your oven rack in the right place. Put a thermometer in the oven. So when you set the dial to 350, it's not necessarily 350. Mm-hmm. And measure the way that I'm suggesting that you measure. And use quality ingredients. Use these high percentage chocolates.
I look at a lot of cookbooks, a lot of cookbooks. And there are a lot of cookbooks that are coming out today because thanks to the internet and new ways of publishing, there's a lot of books that are coming out, and some of them are okay. They're not. I see a lot of cookbooks that aren't great, and for a lot of cooking to help people transition from off of meat and into vegetables, you know, that's good because most people don't want to get that crazy, and they want it to be easy and simple. And okay, so all that's fine, but there are cookbooks that kind of go down in history as I don't want to use the expression game changer. Something, you know, when Julia Child's cookbooks came out about French cuisine, I mean, it just changed everything here in the United States. And I think this is one of these books. I do.
Well, that's just lovely to hear. It was my intention to do a book.
This is a special book, everybody. Holidays coming up. This is special, okay?
Yeah, I'm thinking this would make a very nice holiday gift. It's really pretty. Running Press does beautiful books.
You want to lick every page.
Well,
lick the cover. Everything looks so good.
Yeah, I've had a number of people say, I could just lick that cover. The cake on the cover is an incarnation of what I call the cake that cracked the code, the chocolate cake to live for. I didn't really transition. I changed my diet overnight. That's just what I did, and it worked for me. But I didn't want to eat anything sweet anymore. I became very, very short time a member of the food police till my kids said, this is kind of a story that people know about me. My son said, you're not putting a candle in a sweet potato and telling me that's my birthday cake. And he had a point. And so now, there I went and I just worked until I got something that, no, you know, it was vegan and it was made with quality ingredients. I didn't use junk before. I wasn't going to use it now. But the point is, it didn't say to people who ate it, oh, this is good for a vegan cake. It was just this great chocolate cake. So I've forced myself not to play with it over time because it really is a great cake. This is the most Google cake. But in this, on the cover, Kate Lewis did a gorgeous job of photographing these desserts.
It's got the raised
letters. It's hardcover. It's glossy, full color photographs. The art director did a great job. But this is a soccer tort and so easy to make. But better than if you've been to Austria, you know that those soccer torts are kind of austere tasting, which is probably why they serve them with a big
thing of schlag.
And a glass of water. But in the photo in the book of the soccer tort with the S, I have schlag too. It's just not made from dairy and it's not made from junk. It's a different kind of a thing. My 6-year-old granddaughter wanted this cake for her birthday. And I was thinking, a 6-year-old party? I don't know. The ganache on the cake is dark. But I had left a number of these cakes. I did my book trailer. Look at the book trailer if you get a chance at FranCostigan.com. It's kind of cute, fun. It was fun to do. My kids are filmmakers. They said, come out here. We'll do the movie. And so I had all these swap-out cakes, and I left them, and the kids said, I want that cake. Mm-hmm. And so they made it in a larger size pan, three of them. My daughter-in-law's mother, who... We are very good friends, but she tolerates the way I cook because she likes to separate eggs and that kind of thing. She made the cakes, and she said they were delicious and really easy to do, and she takes this cake now to everyone she knows. That's what we want, and I want people to be successful. So I spent a year...
This whole concept, chocolate, again, I said this in the earlier part of the show. People don't know what's in their food. So they think of chocolate, and for some reason they connect the dots with milk, and they think the two cannot be separated. And that's so far from the truth.
Oh, chocolate, that is so far from the truth. I would underline that and put it in bold if I were writing on my computer right now.
Good chocolate doesn't want to be near milk.
No, and you know what? I have two traditional pastry chefs did advanced praise. It's on the back of the book. That would not have happened many, many years ago, I don't think. But Chef Ron Ben Israel, who's the host of Sweet Genius on Food Television Network and does the most gorgeous wedding cakes. I mean, they are breathtaking. He told me that actually these are amazing desserts without any animal sources and stand on their own as ambrosial desserts. But he told me that he realized a couple of years ago that by taking dairy away from chocolate, you get more chocolate taste. You get more chocolate taste. So you need... I'm not scrimping. These are desserts. You know, I'm not making brown bread. I'm making brownies. But we don't need all the sugar. And certainly, the higher the percentage of chocolate, the lower the percentage of sugar. Without the milk, you get the benefits of these, of dark chocolate, which there really are listed. Now, I'm not telling anyone. I've seen studies lately that say, eat dark chocolate, avoid a stroke, and Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I remember my mom hearing that chocolate was better than broccoli. And it's like, come on.
And somebody, Robin Asbill, posted on my Facebook page, vegan pastry chef Fran Costigan, the other day, a study saying that people who eat chocolate are slimmer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And she said, well, I guess so. Look at Fran. You know, there's balance. But the fact is that these chocolates give you that real, deep, rich chocolate taste that we want. So we need less in terms of being satisfied. A smaller piece. It's not that giant cookie that doesn't taste good. A smaller piece of a beautifully made chocolate cake that is chocolate through and through with different textures. I like to play with textures in a beautiful crumb and a nice ganache and a creamy filling, all without any animal products. There is no palm oil in my recipes. I am not saying that people who use it are wrong. I'm saying it's not for me. I never used it. So when the controversy about palm oil and the environment and the orangutans and people and so on happened, I didn't have to remove the palm oil. I use a mild-tasting American-made extra virgin olive oil. That's my favorite. It almost tastes buttery and rich.
Mm-hmm. Olive oil can have a fruity flavor.
It can. So in recipes where I want the taste of the olive oil to be noticed, in my lemon olive oil truffles, for example, that are finished with little lemon salt, or in the chocolate orange almond cake, that was really, it's a very simple cake, but it was one of the hardest cakes to get right. I remembered eating a cake like that in Italy about 30 years ago. It was creamy. I couldn't get it creamy. I got it gummy or dry, and then I got it creamy. There I will use a fruity olive oil. In the other recipes, I use a neutral one. If you cannot find a neutral extra virgin olive oil, use any neutral oil that you like, but watch out for GMO oils. Yeah, thank you, Karen.
That means genetically modified organisms, and there are soybean oils and canola oils, cottonseed oil, that are genetically modified, and we don't like them here at It's all about food. No, 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 no.
No one should like them.
No, and
read about them.
Yeah.
Karen, listen to Karen Hama.
But let's talk about the good stuff. But before we talk, one more sad note with happy endings here. I want to talk, you go into a lot of detail about a lot of things in this book, which makes it a good read in addition to enjoying the recipes. But we need to know more about chocolate. And there's different kinds of chocolate out there, and some of it doesn't have a nice story attached to it. And a lot of the chocolate that we're familiar with, like Hershey's, for example, has a very scarred past. I've heard that they're changing.
In 2020 their goal?
2020. So meanwhile, a lot of child slaves are going to be exploited and tortured, harvesting cocoa beans that go into your Hershey's Kisses. Yeah. That's right. Child slaves in the Ivory Coast are used in the cocoa business, and this is really sad. But there's lots of alternatives. Now, some of them might cost more, but think about what it is that you're eating. Do you want to really participate in child slavery? I mean, come on. You know, I started this last week, first world problems, mentioning first world problems. I want to change it to first world concerns, I think, instead of problems. But what I'm talking about, we all have, a lot of us have abundance, we have opportunity. We may not be as rich as we like, and some of us may be out of a job and struggling, but a lot of us still have the opportunity to have chocolate. That's a luxury. We should be grateful for everything that we have. But do we want to enjoy something at the expense of children? And it just kills me.
I didn't know until I found out about it. And once one finds out, it was impossible for me to do anything else.
How do we know what chocolates are safe?
Well, I have a list of chocolates that I feel are safe in the back of the book. Of course, in the nature of things, that's going to change. Look for chocolates that say on the label, they will be labeled fair trade, ethical. Some chocolate companies that go beyond even the fair trade rules are very fair. There is an indication of that. You can also, Patty Brightman informed me about a wonderful resource called the Food Empowerment Project. So go to foodempowermentproject.com, and they have a list, an enormous list, carefully done, of ethical chocolates, chocolates they're not sure about, chocolates mm-hmm. where there's transparency, the companies that didn't get back to them. You know, for me, it's as simple, yes, these chocolates cost a little bit more, and I am not a rich person, but I'm paying the extra money. I mm-hmm. can't participate in that. The way I look at it is, at best, harvesting the cocoa bean, which is like a foot, you know, think of a football, is really hard and dangerous work. It's the jungle. It's hot. It's steamy. There are machetes involved, so there's a lot of room for problems. And where Karen is not making this up, this is a fact. This is a fact. There is that we are still talking about slavery in the production of food today or in anything boggles my mind.
Yeah.
But I go out of my way to use organic, fair trade chocolate and sweeteners.
Okay, you mentioned the jungle for a moment, and I remember being in Costa Rica and some friends giving me a cacao fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard for me to imagine how a part of that could become chocolate. Can you?
Yeah, did you whack it open?
Yeah.
And then there was, you saw white?
Yeah, the
like
white fruit,
stuff and
white
then
fleshy
beans.
Stuff. Yeah, but the beans didn't taste chocolatey. I mean.
No, what happens is there's a natural fermentation process that happens, and for some of the growers or the people who make chocolate, this is all proprietary information. Mm. I mean, chocolates don't all taste. I thought mm-hmm. all 70% would taste about the same. They don't. So it has to do with the bean is cut open, the white kind of evaporates out, although I understand it tastes good. It's one of my great wishes is to go to where you were and get a cocoa bean and taste that.
Let's go.
Okay. And then the beans are dried. And then they're, unless it's raw chocolate, they are roasted. And, of course, there are different levels of roasting. That's not going to taste very chocolatey. It's very bitter. When those beans are chopped up, you know, cacao nib, that's what it is. It's a chopped up, think about it like a coffee bean. Then the beans are crushed. The fat is pulled out, and it's called cocoa butter, but it's not dairy butter. And there is cocoa, the cocoa mass is also called cocoa liqueur, but it's not booze. And that's the cocoa mass. And when the cocoa butter comes out, the fat, what you have is really almost defatted chocolate, and that becomes cocoa powder as we know it. And there are different types, natural and Dutch. I go into that in the book. But it's, you know, it's quite a process.
Yeah, do you realize when you're eating a piece of chocolate what's gone on before it got to your store?
Right.
It's just incredible. And then you want to buy it, and you want to get this book, and then you want to really get started.
And then
making,
you have to do some homework, because I tell people any chocolate that tastes good to you out of hand before you've cooked with it or baked with it or melted it, that's the right chocolate to use. We all have different palates, different ideas about what's dark and what's sweet. But one of Fran's rules, it's any chocolate you like the taste of is the right one to use, as long as you stay within the percentages listed in the recipe. If a recipe says 70 to 72% chocolate, and you go to use an 85 or a 60, the recipe will fail. It won't turn out. We don't want that to happen.
No, well, it couldn't be that terrible.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't
perfection.
Have to throw it in the garbage, but your ganache, you know, your truffle center might never set up, or your frosting might run off your cake, so you'll have a nice sauce, or you'll have...
So these are the disclaimers. Use the right percentage of chocolate as noted in the recipe book.
Right. And so, yes, those are the kind of rules I say.
You mentioned carob before, and could we just like take 30 seconds to talk about carob? Okay. Carob is a very nice plant. It's a tree, and it has these pods, and you can chew on the whole pod and grind them up and make flour. You can do all kinds of things with carob. Carob is not chocolate. Carob is not chocolate. Carob is not chocolate. And it should never, ever be compared to chocolate. It should not be confused with chocolate. It should not be used as a substitute. Did you get that? Now, I don't know whose idea it was, why and when carob was a chocolate substitute. They thought that maybe chocolate wasn't good for us.
That's exactly what it was. And that is probably second to the candle in the sweet potato, what got me into the kitchen, because 22 years ago, I mean, there is nothing inherently wrong with a carob cake if you make it right. And carob is not necessarily inherently better for you than chocolate, because a lot of the confections are filled with
If you're not thinking you're
really
getting chocolate
stuff.
And you're open to carob, it can be lovely.
So this is one of the reasons that vegan desserts got a really bad
right.
name in the beginning, was because
yep.
people were saying, here, have this chocolate cake, and it was brown.
Yeah, but it and that was about it.
That was about it, and it didn't taste good.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that started. Chocolate, there are people who say chocolate isn't good for you, and I say if you have an allergy or sensitivity or some, you know, not every food is good for everybody.
Right.
I know someone who can't eat kale, really can't eat kale.
Whoa.
You would be.
I thought there was nothing kale couldn't do.
Except make the bed.
Oh.
But chocolate, actually the fat is healthful, the stearic acid, in balance. It can be a very healthful food. So, yeah, Karen's right. Don't confuse the two. This is not a book about carob. This is a book about chocolate.
Chocolate.
And I have chapters on really every kind of dessert I could think of. I have a whole chapter on truffles. I have a chapter on cakes, little bites, then these showstoppers, which look like they would take from now until next summer. But I break down the steps. I have a suggested game plan, and essentially everything can be made ahead. Lots of things can be stuck in your freezer, not stuck thrown,
right.
but wrapped and put in your freezer and taken out. You want a bûche de Noël coming up? I got you covered. You want an opera cake? You got it. You have stuff left over, some cream, some cake crumbs, make a trifle. You know, and I have everything, of course, is vegan. That's the name of the book. But some are raw, some are gluten-free. And I have a really finally got the gluten-free chocolate cake that passed my test, which means I can't tell the difference.
Wow.
So that's good for you and a lot of people. So many of the component desserts, or if you want to make, you know, I grew up with this Ebinger's blackout cake. My dad went every weekend to the bakery in Brooklyn. So every single time I teach or in front of a group, I say, anyone from Brooklyn? And there has never been no one from Brooklyn yet, including in Atlanta last week at a cooking school. So I made this cake. It's so easy. It's two chocolate cake layers that you cut in half. You don't have to be careful because you're just going to slather chocolate pudding in between and on the sides. And then you throw crumbs from the last bit of cake all over. So you need your vacuum cleaner, but it's stunning and it's yummy. And this person was just like, oh, I remember that cake from my childhood. And that's ultimately why I wrote this book, because even in my classes that were non-chocolate themed, eventually, toward the end, someone would say, that was really good. Can you think of a way to put chocolate in it? And then people got this dreamy look in their eyes. And then that followed with, but can I eat healthfully and eat chocolate? How do I know it's vegan? And so on. And that is what. I want to just warn your listeners that a factoid that I learned in writing this book that was really surprising to me. I thought that any chocolate that wasn't milk chocolate was vegan.
Oh, yeah. You have to read the ingredients.
Got to read the label. Turns out that it is legal for up to 12% milk or milk solids is allowed in chocolate labeled dark chocolate.
It'll say milk.
It's
on,
disclosed.
In the
disclosed. But I didn't know to look for that. Mm. I was like, oh, dark chocolate bar.
Oh, no.
Ethical.
You can taste it.
You can taste it. It doesn't taste as good. It's a filler. It's cheap.
I remember I'm trashing green and black now.
Oh, what a shame.
Well, I mean, I remember when green and black first came out, they were organic, and it was a phenomenal chocolate. I liked the cocoa powder. I used to open up the container and just breathe. It was heavenly.
It's excellent.
And I had this one chocolate cake recipe, no fail, when I used this cocoa. And then somehow it changed, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I heard, because it was first Cadbury bought green and black, and Cadbury makes a lot of milk chocolate, and then Cadbury was acquired by Kraft.
It was a hostile takeover by someone like Kraft.
Yeah.
So it's not poor green and black's fault, but it's not
anymore.
The same. And their bars say, they took the vegan certified off the label,
gone. And
they say organic milk powder.
So you have to continually, unfortunately, be vigilant. Nothing is forever.
Even if you bought your favorite brand the day before, I say look at the label tomorrow, because maybe one of these big guys, you know, this has become a trendy thing. Maybe one of these big guys has bought your favorite chocolate bar. I don't think it will happen to, I mean, I like Theo chocolate in particular. They're in Seattle. They were the first bean to bar. They're really fair. They're one of many that I like, but they're very ethical. I don't think anyone's going to be buying them anytime soon. But you know what? I still read their labels every time.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, I love this Brooklyn Blackout cake. And one of the things that you need to do the next time you're in a bookstore is you have to look at this book and you have to look at the pictures. If there's any doubt in your mind, look at the pictures. You're going to see desserts like that you don't normally see. I mean, these are really stunning, just to convince yourself that you can have everything. You can have your cake and eat it too. How many times have we said that? But really,
well, it's
stunning.
Really true. You know, what the intention, this book had, there were several intentions, and one was to write a book that would be for everyone, for absolute beginners and for professionals, for people who want to read a lot of information in the front of the book and people who just want to go right to it and bake. But in looking around, there are so many beautiful chocolate books
on
the bookshelves. Looked at them, did the research, and it was time for vegans to have a gorgeous chocolate book too. It's very interesting that the non-vegan community has come in and embraced this book because it's gorgeous. Kate Lewis did a gorgeous job.
Now, you've been cooking for a long time and not always vegan. Were there some chefs that really got you going, or a cookbook that was your favorite when you got started, something that inspired you?
I'm inspired by a number of cookbooks. I mean, Julia Child was one of my early inspirations.
Oh, I wish she was around today, Fran. She would love your book.
Do you know what? I think that she would.
Because I know she
would. I met Julia, Ms. Child. I had an opportunity to say hello to her at a traditional conference, and she asked me what I do. And
what
I was,
do you do?
Well, I didn't know what to say. I thought, I'm going to tell Julia Child that I bake without eggs and butter. And I did, and she was so interested. She was a woman who was really interested in the process. Maida Heater's books in the beginning, mm-hmm. Another groundbreaking, you know, a woman who really wrote careful recipes. Anything by Rose Levy Barenbaum. These are not vegan bakers. We haven't had pastry chef's books to go to. I like a book called How Baking Works. And I recommend to all my students or people who want to learn a little bit more that they read it. But Rose's books are fabulous. Alice Medrick, the queen of Omni Chocolate, her books are really good. So this is where I get my inspiration, mostly from traditional magazines, mm-hmm. cake shops. You know, I was in London and Paris recently for... Someone's got to do it, right? I was invited to do chocolate demos at the London and Paris Veg Fests. And so I cruised, you know, the food, what do you call those things? Food halls. Food halls in London.
Food courts.
When I went many, many years ago for the first time, we didn't have that here. We have that here now. And things are really, you know, the food scene's caught up. But it's very interesting. One of my interns who is now interning at Chez Panisse, Alice Waters, another goddess whose books I admire very much. Oh, and Deborah Madison's books inspire me. And Deborah is rewriting Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone, which won all the cookbook awards when it launched.
Groundbreaking.
And she's redoing it. She wrote a lovely blurb for me. She's redoing the book to include more vegan recipes and shouting them out. Vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Vegan. Molly Katzen has a new book, Heart of the Plate, and the vegan recipes are shouted out vegan.
It's about time.
So everyone can eat the way Karen and I do and be just as happy. Have a good piece of chocolate something.
Yeah. Well, this is really a lovely, lovely work of art. Fran, I know you worked your butt off for a long time. You were here on this show almost a year ago when we were talking about, and you were already knee deep in chocolate, I think, by that point.
Guess how much chocolate was used in the making of this book?
Yeah, how much?
Close to 150 pounds.
Whoa.
And I lost track at about 95 pounds of cocoa powder. And I didn't gain any weight.
No, I think you got slimmer.
So
it was so hard.
It was a labor of love. But I mean, I had this in my mind. I had a picture of what I wanted, and I got it. And the publishers really surpassed what I wanted. I, again, want to shout out Kate Lewis. She did a beautiful job photographing the recipes, which were made by two of my baking students, Claire Gray and Christina,
and the art director.
And it's just gorgeous.
Well, you're creating new traditions. I like to talk about traditions and holidays. They're really important. We should all have traditions and holidays. But transitions change, and that's okay. We can always modify our traditions, keeping the good part and leaving the bad parts behind. There are some nasty traditions out there that nobody wants to keep going, but the good ones and making new ones, it's all good. And so vegan chocolate is the way to go. You can have all your favorite chocolate cakes and veganize them, make the world a better place. And I want to mention just before we go, we've got some big holidays coming up. Hanukkah's coming early. I've got a real tradition now. Baked potato latkes, baked potato pancakes on my ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com website. You can watch the video and also see our Thanksgiving real traditions, too. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Fran. Have
Thank
a
you,
delicious
Karen.
Week with chocolate.